You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best team. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat on this Monday, it's a very happy and successful Monday if you're in the Houston Rockets community. The Rockets last night polished off a 118-99 win over the Atlanta Hawks. Expected, but they got it done with a healthy margin. No one had to play major minutes. James Harden had a triple-double. Gerald Green led the team in scoring with 25 points. Eric Gordon had 22 and very high efficiency, 8 of 13 from the field. A lot of good storylines, which we'll touch on over the next 20 to 30 minutes of our daily program. Before we go into the individuals, let's talk about where the team stands right now. With the win, the Rockets 60-14. It's the first season in franchise history in which the Rockets have won 60 games. That in and of itself is a big deal. It's historic at this point what they're doing this season. They're now winners of 9 in a row, 26 of their last 27, and they're 30-2 since James Harden returned from his hamstring injury on January 18th. So that's over 2 months, nearly two and a half, in which the Rockets are playing at just an absurd 30-2 clip. So even though it's a homestand against lesser opponents, I know the vibe was a little lethargic. Chris Paul and Luke Bamute still out with minor injuries, although the good news, the Rockets are actually able to post these big wins while still getting healthier, getting more rest for their big guns. But what the Rockets are doing this season, both in terms of Houston history and the NBA landscape, it is absolutely dominant. Once in a while, you need to step back and smell the roses. Certainly, we mentioned every game the Rockets win from here on out, still 8 to go, shatters the previous franchise record of 58 wins in the season set by the 93-94 championship squad. And as far as the NBA standings, the Rockets at this point have an insurmountable lead for the number one seed, not just in the Western Conference, but the entire NBA. Coupled with losses by Toronto and Golden State yesterday, that win gives the Rockets a magic number of just 3 with 8 games still to play. And of course, there's no Stephen Curry the rest of the regular season for for the Warriors, no confirmed return for Kevin Durant, that's what I was trying to say, or Klay Thompson. So the Rockets now effectively, considering the tiebreakers and the loss column, have a 6-game edge on both Toronto and Golden State with only 8 left to play. So at this point, it's surmountable. For the first time in Houston history, they are going to be the number one seed entering the NBA playoffs. And perhaps with the injury to Stephen Curry, you might actually say they're the favorites now as well. More on that in segment 3. The first couple of segments of our usual 3-point recap, I do want to discuss the Hawks game in particular with our usual post-game recap, but don't want to dwell on it too much because the reality is the Rockets are a really good team. The Hawks at 21-53 are a bad team. So the Rockets did, even without Chris Paul and Luke Bamute, what you would expect them to do against a bad team. You credit the Rockets for taking care of business. Big picture, there's not a whole lot to take out of it. We didn't learn that much from Sunday night's game. So that's why I'm going to have one segment discussing the Curry injury and some of the broader NBA landscape things where the Rockets are as we wake up on this Monday morning. But as far as the Atlanta game, I mentioned James Harden finally had a good game. I'm rolling my eyes as I say that, but he had his fourth triple-double of the season, 35th career, 18 points, 15 assists, 10 rebounds in just 30 minutes. That's big. We heard from Mike D'Antoni before the game. The goal is to keep him at 30 to 32 minutes in most games the rest of the season. They will occasionally bump him up to 38. You'll have a game in which he plays more just to keep his conditioning up so that he's capable of doing that in the playoffs. But by and large, the goal with the number one seed basically insurmountable, the lead for it at this point. You want to keep Harden's minutes manageable. They're also going to give him 1 or 2 games off, Mike D'Antoni said as well. It was not a game off for Harden on Sunday because Chris Paul was out. I don't think you're going to see the Rockets have a game in which both Chris and James don't play. I think you want to stagger which plays when. Maybe Friday, to me, seems like a good game for James to have off because after Tuesday's game against the Bulls, you then only have one game between Tuesday and Sunday. That's the ABC matinee against the Spurs. So if you give Harden Friday off against the Suns, then he essentially has 5 days off to rest between games. So my guess, unofficially, is that that's when you see James Harden get a look. But as far as Sunday, the one nitpick, he was 1 of 7 from three. The three-point stroke hasn't been there, but we've seen James Harden be a good enough shooter this season. That's eventually going to come around. Otherwise, other than the three-point stroke, he was very good. 15 assists in 30 minutes. Didn't have to extend the minutes. And it was a classic game in which James, not only did he play 30 minutes only, they were 30 low-leverage minutes. We have seen this from James. One of the great things about Harden is that he does not have to be ball dominant. Certainly he can be. He can be an elite scorer. But if he can win a game just as a facilitator, then he's more than willing to sit back and let his teammates do the heavy lifting. And that's what he was able to do. The 15 assists, the Rockets made 23s as a team, nearly 39%, including, I believe, 14 in the first half alone. So the Rockets, if they're shooting that well from three and they're able to get a comfortable margin, which they played this game largely with a 20-plus point lead, then James is happy to simply be a facilitator. And so I thought it was great to see the Rockets obviously get out with a big win. No one got hurt. Everyone seemed to be clicking. And as far as James was concerned, he played his 30 minutes, and they weren't even really 30 stressful minutes. He was able to get his teammates involved, and that's why guys like, as I mentioned earlier, Gerald Green with 25 off the bench, Eric Gordon with 22 as a starter, those were really the guys doing the heavy lifting in the starting lineup. And that, to me, the biggest key for the Rockets in this game and of late has been Eric Gordon. In his 32 minutes starting in place of Chris Paul, Eric had 22 points on 8 of 13 shooting, 4 of 9 from behind the arc, and he was a team best plus 19 in his 32 minutes. Now, there are some who will point out that Gordon's performance, as it has seemingly this entire season, has been better when he's in the starting lineup. And if you want to poke holes, you can say, okay, this is a great showing, but how much of this is transferable to when he gets back in his usual six-man role and it's the number three option behind James Harden and Chris Paul rather than the number two? And I would reject that, because if you look at Eric Gordon since the All-Star break, the turning point in Eric's production has not been this brief stretch over the past week that Chris Paul has been out. The turning point has been when he came back healthy after he was able to rest. The combination of the All-Star break, the food poisoning, and then before the All-Star break, when his percentages, his efficiency really dipped, he was shooting just 33.2% entering the All-Star break from behind the arc. I think what you were seeing was a worn-down Eric Gordon. And since he came back on February 28th, the 14 games he's played since the All-Star break, that's basically a month, he is now shooting over 47% from the field and almost 45% from behind the arc. Both games this weekend against the Pelicans and Hawks, both wins at home at Toyota Center. Eric was 4 of 9 from 3 in both games, which is right in line with that, about 44.5%. So not only is he shooting better overall, you're also seeing more consistency. Other than the San Antonio games, the only one I can think of in which he was just a non-factor from 3. Other than that one, he hasn't had that many games where he just goes 10% or below and feels like can't throw it in the ocean. He's been much more consistent since getting that time off. And he's just been a real difference maker, whether he's in the starting lineup or not. We've said all season long why Eric Gordon and Clint Capella, those are your two variables. Saturday night, it was Clint's time to shine, the 18 points, 16 boards, 6 rebounds. If you want more about Capella's growth, I encourage you to listen to Sunday's show if you haven't yet. I did a sit-down with Matt Bullard, Rockets TV analyst, in which we talked about a lot of the issues at the center spot. Certainly Clint Capella, the great games he's had of late against the likes of Anthony Davis, Karl-Anthony Towns, DeAndre Jordan, also the backup center minutes, Ryan Anderson versus Dene. If you want more about the center depth chart, then I strongly encourage you to listen to Sunday's show with Matt Bullard. As far as the recap of Sunday night's game, Clint Capella, he was good, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 7 of 9 shooting. You'll certainly take that in his 28 minutes, but this was a game in which the Rockets honestly did not need that much rim protection. The Hawks just not a very good team, and ultimately just came down to who was going to be able to put the ball in the bucket enough, and with James Harden distributing, the Rockets making 23-pointers as a team, Gerald Green with 25 off the bench, Eric Gordon, with an ultra-efficient 22 points and 8 of 13 in your starting lineup, that was enough for the Rockets to just win this game with offense, 118-99. But even beyond just Sunday night's game, to me, what's encouraging about Eric is it's the continuation of a trend. We've said all season long, he and Clint Capella are your variables. You know what you're getting from James Harden and Chris Paul in terms of impact, especially when you get to the playoffs and potential heavy-duty series like a Rockets-Warriors showdown in the Western Conference Finals would be. The question is, can Clint Capella and Eric Gordon get to that level that, say, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are at, as far as having a number three and number four options that are also at a fringe all-star level at a bare minimum. Well, we've seen certainly from Clint Capella throughout the year that he's at that level, but Eric Gordon has shown you since getting healthy that he is there as well. Again, in his 14 games over the past month, 47%+ from the field, almost 45% from three, very consistent, over 44%, 4 of 9 in each of the two games this weekend. So the rest did him a world of good. And the silver lining is that the same benefits that Eric Gordon is getting from rest, he's an older player, it certainly benefited him. He had the minor back and knee issues before the All-Star break, maybe seemed to be wearing down a little bit. Well, now that you've been able to rest Chris Paul and Luke Bamute for essentially a week, Chris Paul expected to return on Tuesday. With Luke, it seems like it'll be Friday. Chris with the minor hamstring issue, Luke with tendonitis in his knee. Well, hopefully the same benefits you're getting from resting Eric Gordon are going to be present in Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, and all the other Rockets you're able to rest down the stretch of this year, your veterans, courtesy of this insurmountable lead you have by taking care of business so regularly. Again, 30-2 over the last 32 games. To where the number one seed, even as we chat in late March, is essentially a formality. So you're seeing real benefits from Eric Gordon, who's been very consistent over the last month. No, it's not just that he's starting in place of Chris Paul. It's that he's healthy. He's been the same difference maker, whether he's in the starting lineup or coming off the bench. And I think rest is the biggest factor there. And hopefully, by virtue of this huge number one seed advantage that they have at this point in time, you're able to see those same benefits manifest themselves up and down the roster, starting with Chris Paul and Luke Bamute, who have not been able to play over the past week with their minor injuries. Well, maybe saying they haven't been able to play is too strong. We heard Mike D'Antoni say that if Sunday's game meant something, Chris Paul would have been playing. It's more that they haven't been playing because they've been able to rest, and so hopefully that rest provides the same benefits for the rest of the Rockets roster that it already is for Eric Gordon. Now, Eric Gordon led the starting lineup in points, 22 points, and his plus 19 was the best plus-minus on the entire team. But he actually did not lead the Rockets in scoring for the game. That's because Gerald Green, off the bench, 25 points on 10 of 15 shooting, 5 of 10 from behind the arc. On the weekend, the two games that Gerald played against New Orleans Saturday night and Atlanta on Sunday, Gerald made 8 of his 18 threes. That's basically 45%, a huge uptick in production after shooting just 1 of 9 from the field in Thursday's win over Detroit. That was the slugfest, and scoring just 3 points, although he was a plus 15, which speaks to the level of defense we've seen from him lately. His energy has been much improved on that side of the floor. Big difference maker. He had a huge block shot in Portland, also had 9 rebounds against the Spurs last week. So Gerald, even when his shot has not been going, has still been a difference maker of late with his energy, his activity level, his athleticism on defense. And now that his stroke seems to be coming around again, he can be a real difference maker. And it's not that Joe Johnson has played poorly. Joe actually had 9 points, 4 assists, 4 rebounds in his 29 minutes, made 2 of 5 threes, so Joe seems to be picking up his production as well, maybe the challenge for minutes. Now, there's an easy path for both to get minutes now. Gerald played 32 minutes, Joe played 29, because without Chris Paul, without Luke Bamute, it seems likely that certainly James Harden's going to rest ahead. It would not shock me if your other veterans like Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker also got occasional maintenance games with the number one seed basically sewn up. So for the time being, both Gerald and Joe are going to play. Long term, though, when everybody gets healthy for the playoffs, or when everybody gets back in the lineup, I think everybody's mostly healthy now. It's just a matter of maintenance for these guys. But when you have your full rotation available, it seems likely only one of those guys is going to consistently play. And even though Joe's minutes and production have gotten better of late, to me, Gerald is making it almost impossible not to play him. And the interesting thing about it, when I did my sit-down with Matt Bullard yesterday, we were talking about the backup center minutes with Ryan Anderson and Nene. And the case I made, and Matt agreed, was that it's not necessarily that Ryan's going to play more than Nene as far as your permanent backup center. Now, he had mostly of late. Nene played Sunday night because Ryan Anderson took the night off, second night of a back-to-back. But essentially what my contention was, and Matt agreed, was that for a shooting-based player, rhythm is more important than for a power-based player. In other words, Nene, after not playing for a few games, you can put him back in that lineup, and he cannot play for 3 or 4 games, and it's not that hard for him to get back into rhythm. Whereas for a shooter like Ryan Anderson, timing means something. Maybe we're seeing the same thing play out with Gerald Green, because we had seen his usage kind of yanked around, and then in Portland, especially against Detroit, it felt like he wasn't really confident in his stroke. Now, of course, he'll still shoot it, but a lot of the shots weren't even close. Well, this weekend, again, 8 of 18 from behind the arc. That three-point stroke is coming around again, and perhaps it's no coincidence that the three-point stroke is coming around again now that he's getting more regular minutes again. Started in the second half in Portland when he played 11 minutes, and then he's played at least 25 or more minutes in each of the last three games, the Pistons, the Pelicans, the Hawks, on this current five-game homestand. So, with Gerald playing this well, you may be at a point now where if you see him as superior to Joe Johnson, and in my opinion, especially based on his athleticism, I won't say that he's always ahead of Joe. There are certain matchups, especially if you need more scoring in a half-court set where Joe's isolation skills, maybe if you draw a team like Utah, might be more useful. But I would say most matchups, Gerald's combination of shooting and his energy are more important. And if Gerald keeps making shots at this clip, then it's going to be tough to pull him out of the lineup because he's not just a shooter anymore. He's, I don't want to say a positive player in the defensive end, but he's not the liability he was in January. He is at least, at a bare minimum, holding his own defensively. Offensively, he's making shots. You're also seeing him convert on lobs. He's making plays off the ball as well. And just in general, his activity level on both ends of the court is becoming a real difference. And if his shooting is correlated with his usage, if it's a case in which if you play Gerald more regularly, you get the types of shooting numbers you got this weekend, in which, as we mentioned, 8 of 18 in those two games, including 5 of 10 on Sunday night, if by playing Gerald more consistently, you also unlock a more consistent three-point shooter, then that may be something that you just have to bite the bullet and do. I think it's great that it's turning out the way it is, in that if Gerald ultimately jumps Joe Johnson on Mike D'Antoni's list, it's not because Joe Johnson is terrible, because Joe Johnson's actually picked up his play himself. And I've never been as down on Joe as a lot of Rockets Twitter, because ever since he's gotten to Houston, he's actually made a lot of really sharp heads-up plays in terms of his ball movement, his energy, his overall presence. His IQ is very high on both ends of the court. It's just that he was missing shots. Well, now he's finally starting to make some open shots, and to the point where I think he's getting more confident as well. And there could be more matchups where you need Joe, or who knows, maybe you have an injury. We've seen what's happened with the Warriors and Stephen Curry. Maybe somebody gets hurt for the Rockets and you need Joe Johnson to step in. But ultimately, I like that if Gerald is in fact forcing his way into the back of that rotation on a regular basis, is that happening just because Joe can't throw the ball in the ocean for whatever reason and you feel compelled to do it simply because you can't trust Joe? No, if you make that change, and I think Gerald is just forcing his way in with this level of play on both ends of the court over the past week, it's not what Joe isn't doing, it's about what Gerald is doing. And that's the best case scenario, because sure, Gerald is playing well himself, but also you're getting Joe Johnson into more of a rhythm to where Mike D'Antoni feels like that if the Rockets need it, either because of the matchup or because there are injuries somewhere, he can trust Joe Johnson as well, even if it just so happens that Gerald Green is a little bit higher on Mike D'Antoni's trust list going into the playoffs. Again, the Rockets haven't said this. It's just my guess. Gerald is playing so well right now on both ends of the court. The proof will be in the pudding once the full rotation comes back, but my guess is that Gerald has jumped Joe. Nothing against Joe, because I think Joe has picked up his level of play as well. It's just Gerald, when you have a guy that's shooting nearly 45% from three and also flying around defensively, making plays with his speed, his athleticism, mentioned the lobs off the ball as well. He's been a very dynamic player this weekend, and he's been a very dynamic player on defense over the past couple of weeks. Mentioned the Portland and the San Antonio games. And so combine that with the three-point shooting stroke that we saw on Sunday night. And yes, I know it's the Hawks, but that's the type of player that is going to be very viable for you against anyone, including the types of teams that you would play in the playoffs. So Gerald Green, your leading scorer on Sunday night, 25 points. And my guess is that this past week has given Mike D'Antoni a lot to think about in terms of just how viable Gerald Green is once you get to the postseason. And that brings me to my third and final segment of today's show, which is about the postseason. Because we don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. The Hawks are not a good team. The Rockets did what they were supposed to do with that 118-99 win. The Rockets are 60-14 for a reason. They are a juggernaut. They are dominant. They should beat teams like that. One team that maybe they shouldn't beat in the eyes of a lot of analysts is the historically elite Golden State Warriors. Now, the Rockets are basically up six games now on the Warriors, who are 54-19, and the Rockets own the tiebreaker. A lot of that, though, is due to the Golden State injuries. Stephen Curry has missed a lot of time with an ankle injury. Now, after coming back Friday night, we discussed it with Matt Bullard yesterday, the news of the weekend being that Curry suffered a grade 2 sprain of the MCL in his left knee, which is going to keep him out, it sounds like, at least about 5 weeks. He'll be reevaluated in 3 weeks, but Steve Kerr, Warriors coach, said Sunday that there's basically no way that Curry plays in the first round. And because of that, it's not a given that the Warriors advance out of the first round. As crazy as it is, it's not unprecedented. Think back to 2007 when the 67-win Dallas Mavericks, led by Dirk Nowitzki, the MVP, lost in the first round to the 8th-seeded Warriors. Maybe this is history coming full circle, but it's not unprecedented, especially with a Western Conference that's as loaded as it is. Some of the teams near the bottom of the bracket, San Antonio, Minnesota, could be a lot more daunting than they appear to be now if you get guys like Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler back. Both would have multiple All-Stars. We've seen how dominant Utah has been of late. Oklahoma City, they lost last night to Portland. It's not unfathomable that they could slip into the bottom couple of teams in the playoff picture because they have a fairly difficult schedule coming up. So there's a lot of possibilities, and if the Warriors don't have Curry in the first round, it's not a given that they advance. They're still strong favorites, but you at least have to be open to possibilities. But bigger picture, I think it's still likely that they're going to advance, assuming Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson each return and that Draymond Green's nagging shoulder issues aren't a big deal. They still have 3 All-Stars, and one of those 3 All-Stars, Kevin Durant, is an MVP-caliber player. So if they're even close to 100%, the odds are you're still looking at that Western Conference showdown, final showdown, I should say, between the Warriors and the Rockets. But this weekend, the odds may have shifted. For the first time, with home court becoming favorable for the Rockets, and Stephen Curry now, in my opinion, you can listen to yesterday's show with Matt Bullard for more analysis on specifics of his MCL injury. That's something that Matt suffered in his career. But it's very unlikely, in my opinion, that you see Curry get back to 100% this season. It's not a huge difference maker because even, think back to the 2016 playoffs. He suffered a grade 1 sprain, and he was never quite the same. That was the year the Warriors almost lost to the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, did lose in the NBA Finals to the Cavaliers. Curry still averaged, I believe, over 26 points per game after coming back from the MCL on almost 44% shooting from the field, 40% from three. But those numbers were down from the nearly 50 and 45% he shot from the field and three, respectively, over the season that year. And overall, he just looked a little less explosive. I think he'll be back. I don't think an MCL injury is going to be season-ending unless it's grade 3, which it's not. So he'll be back, and he'll still be pretty good. The Warriors have a very talented medical staff. Kevin Durant returned after a grade 2 MCL last year and was a difference maker down the stretch as the Warriors won the title. So I do think Curry will be back. However, I think he'll be closer to 80 or 90%, and that's a big deal because for the Rockets, margins matter. It's the same principle as home court. Does it completely change the dynamic? No, but against a historically elite team like the Warriors, you want to hit at the margins, chip away wherever you can. So the Rockets getting home court advantage, including Game 5 and Game 7 in Houston, that's big. Having Steph Curry that's at 80 or 90% rather than 100%, that's big as well. So I do think it tilts the odds towards the Rockets. Combine that with a team that's 60-14, 30-2 in their last 32. For the first time, I think I'm prepared to say that the Rockets have at least a 50-50 shot if the Warriors look like what I think they're going to look like as I sit here in late March and talk about it after Steph Curry's injury. And I'm sure some are initially going to say, well, does this taint it in any way? My response to that would be no. Injuries are a part of the sport. So if the Rockets beat the Warriors with a limited Stephen Curry, does it matter to me? Not at all. It's a part of the game. The Warriors' first title came when that Rockets team in the Western Conference Finals was trotting out Jason Terry and Pablo Prigioni to guard Steph Curry because Pat Beverly and Donatas Mataiunas were out with injuries. And that forced Terrence Jones into action in place of Mataiunas at the power forward spot. They also, the Warriors that year, got Memphis without Mike Conley, the Cavaliers without Kevin Love. You can go back in Rockets history to pretty much the entire Tracy McGrady and Yao Ming era. Injuries are a part of the sport. So yes, there's probably going to be some random idiots on Twitter and the Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless types who try and, if the Rockets win with Curry, not quite himself, talk about some silly asterisk. Ignore them. Be tough. There's no reason to let guys like that get in your head. The trophy, the parade, it is yours. Go back to the 90s. It's never bothered me at all, the stuff about Michael Jordan and the Rockets' 2 titles. Are they tainted at all? Not for me. just be tough. Don't let these random hot take artists affect you. You know better. And it's not like it's going to be easy. Even if Steph Curry never played again, this is a really tough league. Toronto, Portland, Oklahoma City. You can throw Minnesota and San Antonio in there if they get Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard back. It is not easy to be the best team out of 30. It is really freaking hard. So the idea that the Rockets' significance of winning a title, if they're lucky enough to do that, would be taken away if Steph Curry isn't quite himself, that's just silly. Will some people argue it? Maybe. But if those people argue that, well, they're just being ridiculous, and you should ignore them. You know better. If you win the title, the trophy is yours, the parade is yours. That's all that matters. Injuries are part of the game. Sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. I would argue the last 10 years or so, the Rockets have been one of the teams in the league that have been most negatively impacted by ill-timed injuries. Go back a decade ago, the stuff with Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady. You can also go back, as we said, the 2015 playoffs, the Western Conference Finals run, when Beverly and Monte Ioannis were each unable to take part. I would also argue the Warriors have been a team that's been most immune to it, because they've gotten so many weakened teams on their playoff runs, whereas largely the Warriors have been intact. Maybe this is fate evening out. You know, the hashtag ball don't lie, in which the Warriors are now getting some breaks to go against them the same way they've gotten breaks to go for them. It could also argue that winning, well, they've won two titles, but going to the NBA Finals three consecutive years, it takes a toll. And maybe they're more prone to injuries because of these extended runs. So, whatever the case, if the Warriors get to the Western Conference Finals but lose to the Rockets, or even if they don't get to the Western Conference Finals, does it take anything away? No, absolutely not, in my opinion. Injuries are part of the game. Sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. So far, it's going in the direction of the Rockets positively, not so much for the Warriors. Knock on wood, hope that continues. Now, in reality, I don't expect the Warriors to lose in the first two rounds. You have to be open to the possibility, but with Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, assuming all those guys are able to play, they're still going to be really good. You've got three All-Star caliber players, one of them being an MVP. So they're still going to be good. But I do think a limited Curry is a big deal. We've seen the stats. I've retweeted them on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose. The Warriors, without Curry or with a limited Curry, they're not the elite offense they are with him. And I think even when he returns, and that's what I want to discuss, because as far as the Rockets are concerned, I still think the far and away likely scenario is that the Warriors still get to the Western Conference Finals. But I think a limited Stephen Curry with the MCL is going to be a bigger deal than, say, last year when Kevin Durant suffered a grade 2 MCL strain but came back and was still a difference maker in the playoffs. Because Kevin Durant's game, first off, it happened a little early in the year. Kevin Durant's injury happened in either late February or early March. It was about 3 to 4 weeks earlier than Curry, so he had a little more time to build back up. But Durant's game on both ends of the floor is more about length. Even if his shiftiness, his ability to move side to side, an MCL injury, it hits at your knee's stability. Even if the shiftiness for Durant is a little taken away, offensively, he's basically 7 feet tall, an elite shooter. He can always shoot over people. Defensively, that length is going to cause immense problems, even if he doesn't necessarily have the shiftiness. For Stephen Curry, his entire game is built around that shiftiness. Defensively, he's sort of a liability to begin with, so I think if he can't move side to side that well, it's going to make him a huge defensive liability. It seems like the Rockets will look to exploit on switches. The Warriors will try and hide him, but the goal for the Rockets will be get players involved in switches, and whoever Curry gets switched onto need to take advantage. Offensively, his ability to move side to side. Think back to the defining possession of the 2016 Finals when it looked like Curry got locked up by Kevin Love. In my opinion, it's because you couldn't see Stephen Curry with the MCL move as well as he did before that. And the other issue to think about with Stephen Curry, it's not just the MCL. That's in his left knee. On the right leg, you have the ankle that he has sprained 4 times this year, and he has already admitted that is not going to be anywhere near 100% until next season. When players suffer an injury to one leg, essentially what happens, especially when they first come back, you tend to trust the other leg a little more to kind of ease your way back in and kind of build trust back up in the body part that's injured. That's not really going to be a possibility for Curry because it's his left knee that's compromised with the MCL, while it's the right leg that has continually had the ankle sprains. So I think it's going to make it all the more difficult for Curry to be shifty because you're going to see both legs less than 100%. It's not like he's going to be able to trust one substantially more than the other. So I do think Curry is going to be back. I think even if he's just out there largely as a floor spacer, he's still incredibly valuable, the best shooter the game has ever seen. But he is not going to be as shifty as he once was, and if you combine that with home court advantage being in the Rockets' favor, and a team that's even better than most optimists, including myself, thought, again, 16-14, but more impressively, 30-2 since Harden's return from a hamstring injury on January 18th. That's over 2 months of over 900% basketball, which is just absurd. In my opinion, for the first time, you can say on this Monday that the Rockets, at a bare minimum, have a 50-50 shot. And you could argue that it might even be a lot better than that, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen with Steph Curry. We still haven't even seen Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson return. And by the way, the Klay Thompson injury is to his shooting thumb. So there are a lot of questions with the Warriors. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, assuming they will make it through the first couple of rounds and that Stephen Curry will come back. None of those things are a given. But even if the best-case scenario transpires for the Warriors, there's enough reason for doubt now between the home court, between what we saw from Curry with the grade 1 MCL 2 years ago, to believe that the Rockets have chipped away on the margins enough to where when the Rockets line up against the Warriors, if that in fact is the case, as we've all expected all season long in the Western Conference Finals, I think now you can legitimately make the case that the Rockets are the favorite. And if they advance, then no, it does not bother me one bit if some idiot tries to argue on Twitter or Skip Bayless, whoever it may be, that, well, they didn't beat the Warriors with Curry at 100%. Bull. This is the game. It is very physical. It is very challenging. Injuries happen. Some years they go your way. Some years they don't. Rockets fans know very well they have not generally gone Houston's way over the past 10 years or so. So maybe this is fate evening out for a change. I don't know. But what I will say is I don't think the injury takes away anything from the Rockets if they are lucky enough to get through the Western Conference Finals and ultimately get that ring. It doesn't mean anything. You win the ring, and as far as the other teams, let the chips fall where they may. It's not going to be easy for the Rockets no matter what. They've just got to focus on getting 16 more wins when the regular season ends, and whether Steph Curry's out there or not, whether he's 80%, 90%, 70%, or 100%, it doesn't matter. For the Rockets, it's do they get 16 wins or not? And if they get 16 wins, nothing else matters. You are the champions. That's all there is to it. And with that, I think I can end today's show. So if you want any more regular content, the best place to get it for me or the show is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, email lockedonrockets@gmail.com, Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, or lockedonrockets.com, our website. Those are all places where you can leave comments, ask questions, suggestions, make advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. We know the Rockets are the best team in the NBA, 60-14, and if you want regular coverage, well, there's no better place to get it than right here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best team. So for now, I'll sign off. As always, thanks to you guys for listening, and we'll be talking again tomorrow night when the Rockets take on the Bulls, the fourth of this five-game homestand in Houston from Toyota Center in Houston. Until then, folks, have a good day, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.